ginseng annually brings millions of dollars in revenue into Appalachia, but its future as a revenue option or even its existence at all in these parts is far from certain. Growers are struggling to conserve the plant and ensure the vitality of the industry. Those concerns, as well as new research that sheds light on the therapeutic qualities of the plant, were discussed at the 2014 Ginseng Summit. A small gathering of key stakeholders in the ginseng industry gathered at the Golden Seal Botanical Sanctuary just outside the small town of Rutland in Meigs County, Ohio, to discuss important topics surrounding the medicinal root. Glynis Board reports.
About 35 gathered, producers, buyers, government enforcement agents, and academics, to discuss relevant topics within the ginseng industry. United Plant Savers hosted the summit. Susan Leopold is the Medicinal Native Plant Conservation Group's executive director.
Everyone shares the same passion, which is to have ginseng be a part of our forest economy for generations to come.
The last Ginseng Summit occurred in 2008, when these various industry players met to discuss the issues they collectively face.
An early stage of something that may grow into something that's recognized to be a valid program, much like USDA certified organic. And we all know that not everybody...
That's Eric Burkhart, one of the organizers of the Ginseng Summit, addressing the group. He's an academic from Penn State University who's been researching ginseng, the culture, the industry, and the science thereof for over a decade.
There's a lot of growers, forest-based growers here, and there are a lot of issues that these growers face as they're trying to operate within what has traditionally been a wild harvested kind of industry. And so they are dealing with a bunch of issues such as poaching and lack of genetic stock and lack of institutional support or institutional alignment in terms of how they process paperwork and so on.
Demand for ginseng root in Asian markets has fueled the ginseng industry since the 1700s, when the plant was discovered in North America. Since then, an ever-increasing demand has landed the plant on a list of endangered species, alongside things like ivory and shark and mahogany, species that are carefully monitored to ensure that international trade doesn't threaten their survival. But Burkhart says there's very little awareness in this country that the ginseng industry even exists in North America, let alone the threats it faces.
So, for example, everybody understands that there is a maple syrup industry that operates on forest lands, and that group of stakeholders, maple syrup producers, have worked very well with agricultural colleges and forestry schools and that sort of stuff to develop robust programs, not only around research, but around economics and branding and the appropriate involvement of departments of agriculture and that sort of stuff. And we haven't experienced that with ginseng. Ginseng is still considered very much a fringe product in most states where it's exported from. There's really no structure or awareness built around this industry. And so growers are still struggling with very basic things like the ability to harvest their crop whenever they deem it appropriate versus being bound to regulations designed for wild harvesters.
Current regulations are designed to safeguard the plant's existence in the wild. You can't harvest a plant that's younger than 5 years old. You can't harvest except when the berries are ripe and ready themselves to be planted. You have to have all your roots certified with approved dealers. And the rules vary from state to state. In the world today, the highest priced ginseng is root that grows naturally or plants that have been grown in natural settings. Holly Chittum, a researcher from Maryland University's Integrative Health Department, has done a lot of work researching forest-grown medicinal plants.
When we talk about wild and wild simulated ginseng, it's all about an export market at this point. And that's because they're really hard to grow and it takes a long time, and they're the ones that are willing to pay the money that would actually pay the, you know, the growers back for, you know, that time investment.
But Chittum is hopeful that a more robust market will develop in this country. She explains in Western or allopathic medicine, the herb is considered an adaptogen, meaning it modulates functions in the human system like hormones and immune responses. In fact, She herself uses ginseng intermittently in her own personal health maintenance routine.
The theory is, and there's a lot of research behind it that really supports it, is that it actually helps your body to just deal better with the stress response on a cellular level. Wow. So that you have more energy, but you also sleep better. You know, it's also helps to level your mood out, that sort of thing. And with immune response, I think that's kind of the easiest way to show the adaptogenic effect is that if your immune is working, you know, too hard, too much, then it would kind of modulate it and bring it down. And if your immune system needs a boost, it would bring it up.
Well, that sort of sounds like magic.
It seems like that to us. That's not how we think of medicine, right? We think of it acting on our body and changing our body's chemistry. Like the medicine is what does something. Well, in this case, the medicine is actually nudging our body to do its own work, to do what it needs to do on its own. It's big medicine here in the States, and it's especially big medicine in China. It's, you know, been used there for, they say, 4,000 years, you know.
Another summit attendee discussing therapeutic research findings was Marla McIntosh, a professor at the University of Maryland at College Park. She studies the genetics of American ginseng.
I became interested in ginseng because it's a non-timber product of forests. And since I have always worked in forestry, it's a high priority to give landowners a reason to keep their forests in forests rather than develop them and have some type of income that does not depend on harvesting the trees.
Studying and comparing ginseng populations that span various geographical regions throughout the country, McIntosh was able to determine genetically different variations of the plants. And among those differences, she found various combinations and levels of the bioactive components called ginsenosides from region to region.
And this is very important because the different ginsenosides have different modes of action. And for example, some ginsenosides are known to promote cell growth and would help in heart diseases, whereas others are known to inhibit growth, and these would be helpful for applications in cancer therapy.
McIntosh says given the genetic testing procedures and technologies available today, conservation efforts need to be aimed at preserving not simply the plant, but also the genetically diverse populations which stand to benefit us in ways we've only just begun to understand. It's an overriding sentiment at the summit, echoed by Susan Leopold, executive director of United Plant Savers, who hosted the event. She says the goals of the summit are twofold.
Conservation through cultivation. We want to have cultivated sources that people are growing American ginseng on their woodlots. But we also want to be able to have a national ginseng conservation plan that looks at protecting wild populations of genetic diversity throughout ginseng's range.
To that end, United Plant Savers is promoting a petition asking the Federal Department of Agriculture, the Forest Service, and the Fish and Wildlife Service to work to endorse better management practices, quote, that essentially mitigate climate change, enhance rural economies, and provide a sustainable source of wild medicinal plants for future generations, which has a strong cultural heritage throughout the Appalachian Range, close quote. In the meantime, folks like those at the 2014 Ginseng Summit are working to find ways to collaborate among themselves to develop and align best practices to sustain their agroforest business. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Meigs County, Ohio.